Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS, and my name is Roy. I'm the control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net, going strong 44 years now. Every Sunday night, we sit in front of our radios, and we inform each other, learn from each other, entertain each other, and have a bit of fun. And I thank you all for joining me again this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. So I will drop for a second and give you the usual links. If you want to reach me via email, that would be for mailbag questions that you are unable to ask during the technical net. Or if there's some topic in the news that you're a semi-expert on and would like to share your expertise with us, or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for them, or if you saw something space or NASA-related and you would like to have Paul comment upon it, of course, Paul has his own email address. You can email him at spacenetreport@gmail.com. But if you want to email me, you can do that. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. We have a link page available with all kinds of interesting articles and YouTubes that I see throughout the week. I cut and paste them and put them into a little personal page that stays up 24/7. And you can access it at any time. Just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to my link page. We have a chat room. It's been a little bit on the quiet side lately. Not when the repeater went down, then it was real lively, but otherwise kind of quiet. You can get there if you're so inclined by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And, of course, we have an audio stream of the Glen Oaks repeater. I set it up for the technical net, but some people asked me to keep it live for the rest of the week, and so I have. So if you're curious what's going on Glen Oaks or this technical, if you do not have radio access, just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to our audio stream. In addition, I always like to remind people that my KC2NJI has a great archive site of these, the technical nets. His site is amateurradio.tv, and he has audio files of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So, you know, when you have nothing better to do, take a look at amateurradio.tv. Pull a couple of the audio files from the good old days and listen to the wisdom of people who've either moved out of the area or have become silent keys. Let me drop for a second. I'll be right back with our plans for tonight. We have a standard operating plan for tonight. We will ask for questions and topics for discussion. We will hope that the first few will be amateur radio related. We will take down the people's call sign, their first name, and make up a little list. As the night progresses, you are free to bring up any science or technology topic you wish, and I'm game if you are. That should take us, hopefully, to about 10:15. WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. That will take us to about 11 p.m. I will return to tie a bow on it and wish you all a happy week. And that's the plan. If the laws of physics don't screw things up, if the repeater doesn't crash, if my computer doesn't crash, if I don't crash, that's the idea. That's the plan. So let us begin. If anyone has any questions tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and call sign.
W2BZ, non-ham radio related.
Enter Xenon Africa, everybody.
Rich and Wes recognized. Anyone else want to put your name on the list? Anyone with any amateur radio questions tonight? Okay, I guess people need to be warmed up. I hope this isn't a portent of things to come. I realize Easter today. I hope everyone's having a great Easter. And tomorrow is April 1st. That's April Fool's Day. I hope you're not subject to any foolishness tomorrow. Anyway, one more last try. We'll give people tries later on as well. But anyone else want to put your name on the list, preferably for an amateur radio-related question for tonight?
WMZ. I don't have anything to say, but that's checking in. I'm here and listening to what's going to happen.
Okay, Mike, very good. Glad to have you aboard. That's sort of what I do. I listen with an ear and try and figure out what's happening. So thank you very much, Mike. Okay, let's go with you, Rich, first, and we'll ask again if people have any questions as the night progresses. What's your question or comment for tonight, Rich?
Okay, good evening, Roy, and good evening, everybody else. This is going to take the participation of Paul. Hopefully he's around. And I was, it just entered my mind this week that roughly 60 years ago or more, I don't have the exact date, we landed men on the moon. 60 years later, we're trying to land men on the moon. I don't get it. What happened in a lifetime of flying, of space travel, that we're just now struggling to get back to the moon? It just doesn't make sense. I know the space shuttle started up after the Apollo missions. Is that what happened? We just got so sidetracked by the space shuttle that NASA forgot about the moon? Crazy if you think about it. 60 years later, you know, Elon Musk is blowing up rockets to try to get one that works to go to the moon. That's my basic question, Roy. Back to you.
AC2GS. Well, I look forward to hearing Paul's part on this discussion. I hope he's in front of his radio. It's a complicated situation. NASA spent, we spent a lot of money getting to the moon. And unfortunately, although you and I think we went there to assert humanity's role in the universe and learn and discover and colonize and do all the great things that all my little paperback books that I read as a child, many of them written by Robert Heinlein, suggested that we would. It was a pissing match between the Russians. Sputnik really scared the heck out of us, and we felt the need to crush communism, and so we spent all those billions of dollars developing Saturn V rockets. We don't have Saturn V rockets anymore, and unfortunately the powers that be decided that the solution in the 21st century wasn't going to be Saturn rockets, but these weird little things that had to be refueled 10 times before they made it all the way to the moon and back. So the problem is that the engineering wasn't focused on extremely high-power rockets. They were focused on theoretical refuelable rockets that Elon promised would be ready by 2024. Well, he broke that promise, and I could go on and on, but I won't. So, I mean, that's the problem. We're not investing as much real money as we did for the lunar exploration research and development, and we got sidetracked into some kind of blind end, would be my guess. And it's going to get time. It's going to take time for people to kind of, you know, walk back Elon and go with some other design. But, Paul, you're our expert, so I'd love to hear your opinion.
Comment?
Okay,
yeah,
very good. I heard Wesley in there. Let me see if I have it. Very good. No, you hit it on all eight cylinders, I think, Roy. Very well done. That's the motivation of getting to the moon at that point. But before that, there was a lot of research and things going on. Actually, it all started with intercontinental ballistic missiles. You know, we came up with the Titan rocket, for instance. You know, a rocket that you could store liquid fuel in there for decades, and when you need it, it'll launch. You know. They developed that, but then they said, you know, we could use this for sending satellites into space. that type of thing. Old people. And the Russians were doing the same thing. They were looking for intercontinental ballistic missiles. And one thing led to another. The Russians were naturally ahead of us to some degree. Notice their spacecraft is very heavy. Their weight ratio is very heavy because they planned on launching heavy nuclear bombs with their rockets. We went the other way. We decided to use it for manned space programs. We cut back on the weight. We focused more on technology. After a while, our technical expertise we got better at it than they did. And we wound up, of course, winning. There were a lot of programs that were going on before that, the Mariner program, which sent a spacecraft past Venus, a couple of spacecraft past Mars, eventually orbiting Mars. We were doing that type of investigation, scientific investigations, were planned early on. But when this competition became a true competition between us and the Russians, then like Roy says, they just poured billions of dollars. I think the equivalent, back then it was $30 billion. The equivalent today would probably be, 10 times that amount. To give an idea, they had 4% of the gross national product of the United States going to the space program at the time. Now you have, I think it's one-fourth of one-tenth of a percent going to the space program. So we're trying to do more with basically less. The good news is we have commercial partners. So as much as NASA is pouring $27 billion a year into the space program, which includes not only trying to get to the moon or scientific telescopes like the James Webb Space Telescope, and also aeronautics. They're still working on that. NASA is National Aeronautics and Space Ministry. So out of that $27 billion, the money is going into that. So there's a lot of money going into the space program, but percentage-wise, nowhere near what it was. But because of the private companies involved, Blue Origin, SpaceX, Firefly, Relativity, one right after the other, Rocket Lab. These companies are all pouring money into their programs, driving the cost down. And most of them now are shooting for reusability. Now, it's a good idea to go to the moon nowadays because that's going to be the goal, that you have some, reusability. Some of these rockets are going to be able to come back to Earth. The one that's going to go actually land on the moon will actually land on the moon, go back up to a space station called Gateway, return back to the moon over and over. It'll be refueled. They'll send tankers out there to refuel these things. They're not going to throw them away. All those six lens that land on the moon, they're all gone. They got thrown away. Let me drop it. No more. You send one down to the moon, you'll send it back up. It'll dock with a space station. Eventually, you have another crew get onto that same rocket and go back down to the moon. The idea is to drive the cost down of doing this. And the other goal is not just to bring 840 pounds of rocks collectively out of the six missions back to Earth, but the idea is to go there and actually stay there. And eventually, like the first mission, they're going to on 6 days, give you an idea. But that's going to extend to 2 weeks, and eventually they'll figure out how to stay through a lunar night. And then at some point, they'll decide to have a permanent base there. So I guess, that's the way it's evolved. With the space station, you needed that. I know this is a long answer, Roy, but the space station, you needed that. To go to the moon and to eventually go to Mars, you need to know how you're going to live in space, eat in space, live with others for 6 months or a year on in tight quarters. You're going to have to do that. on the Gateway space station around the moon. You're going to have to do that on the moon. You're going to have to do that for 6 months traveling to us living on Mars for a year, another 6 months coming back. So, you know, you really needed a space station for that. So they built this shuttle for 35 missions that went to the International Space Station to build that $100 billion space station. And that's what we got today. And now you even have other companies, private companies, in the not-too-distant future that will have their own space stations that are coming. So it's just evolving. It's the way things go. They did it with airplane flight. They did it with boats in the early days, you know. They did it with little cars and Model Ts and, you know, all the way up to what we got today. Anyway, back to you, Roy. Hope that helped answer your question, Rich. WS to us.
AC2GS. So thank you very much, Paul. Yeah, I mean, I hoped for a long answer because it warrants a long answer. This is a very, very complicated subject, and really to dig into it, we could take about five or six technical nets and pack them together just to go through it. My big problem, unfortunately, is in retrospect, I understand the motivating forces for the Apollo mission. It was a pissing match with the Soviets. I don't think we have quite the same pissing match with the Chinese, so we can't use that as an excuse. And research is wonderful, but governments will only pay so much for pure research. That's why every so often we have to read these semi-foolish articles of what having a base on the moon will bring the United States. And one of the most ridiculous ones is mining helium-3. The idea being that helium is spewed out by the sun and our magnetic field protects us from many things, including helium-3. So the amount of solar helium-3 that reaches us is minimal. The moon, not having a magnetic field, collects significantly more. The idea is you can mine it. It's very, very, very rare. So if there was an actual demand for it, it would be, it would be 1,000 times or 100,000 times its weight in gold. The problem is you need helium-3 for a couple of little research projects, which don't really warrant going to the moon. And then there's always fusion, which is 20 years away. It's been 20 years away for 60, 70 years. So if we're able to figure out how to do fusion in an efficient means and use helium-3 as the fuel, that's a possibility for why we should invest hundreds of billions of dollars on a base on the moon. I mean, I love science. I love science fiction. I would love there to be a lunar base. But, you know, if I was an accountant, I couldn't for the life of me explain the expense for the average taxpayer who was getting a little dicey about Apollo back in the old days. We remember landing on the moon. I remember people complaining that the weather had changed because we're shooting those damn rockets in the air.
Well, Paul, thanks for that explanation. I still have some questions. Apparently, the United States felt that the moon, there was really nothing there for us, right? I mean, we got there, good, that's done, satisfying F. Kennedy's memory, but they didn't find anything there except some rock and some dust. So they had to make a decision that the moon's not just, isn't worth it. Isn't worth the expense. But now, all of a sudden, it's worth it. That's what I don't understand. Yet why they abruptly stopped moon exploration and sort of took a 60-year detour only to get back to the moon. I still don't understand it. Back to you, Roy.
Comments.
Okay, Wesley, one second. I just want to say that, well, the reason why they landed on the moon, well, the reason why we're looking at the moon is because it's the closest obtainable thing. Having missions to Mars, as long as you don't talk to Elon, is a real problematic situation that Dick, may rest in peace, used to bring up with regular joy. The amount of supplies you have to ship in order to maintain one living, breathing human being. You know, robots are a lot cheaper. But Wesley, what did you want to say?
Up on the notes on Business Insider, to actually explain it, according to astronauts and NASA administrators, the main reason it's taking so long to launch a new moon mission has nothing to do with science and technology. The biggest obstacles, lack of budget and political will. And I believe that's obvious. Back to you.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's basically what I said. If we spent a lot of money and built some rockets that are bigger than Saturn V, we too could go back to the moon for some strange reason. If you want to have refuelable, reusable equipment, that would theoretically be a game changer. Right now, it's a very theoretical game. Good old Elon, I think at one point suggested that he was going to be able to turn over and reuse this equipment in one day. I think it's about a month. I don't know how cost effective it all is. So yeah, it's ultimately money. We haven't grown any stupid. We could pull out the plans for the Saturn V rocket and give it enough money, we could just build new ones. We can't quite reuse the computers because those computers can't even be cobbled together anymore. They were so ancient. But if you gave someone an unlimited budget, probably I would rather they build that accelerator they were considering back in Texas 20 years ago. I think that would be money well spent at the time. But governments are cheap, and unless you can give them a good reason, like pissing off the Soviet Union, most taxpayers are not willing to pay the bill.
I have a question to Paul. Paul, do you remember what was the exact date when Len Cernan and Harrison Smith conducted the last moonwalk?
The date of the last moonwalk, is that what you said? That would be 1972, December. Is that what you asked, Wesley?
You are great. It was December 14, 1972.
Yes, okay, yeah. Cernan was the last guy to actually take his foot off the moon. So he thought we were going to be back sometime soon. He was very disappointed that we never returned. He's moved on. He's passed away a few years ago. And that was the only mission that you had a real scientist on board. He had a geologist. Everybody else was a pilot. And that was the only mission with a real scientist that went up on that mission. We're gonna have to just wait to see. Someday in the future, it's only gonna be private companies flying to the moon. Someday, we won't be here. Just like today, you don't have government airplanes being built. You have all private planes being built. Anyway, we'll turn it back to you, Roy. I could do more of this during the space program. The space net, I guess. Harrison Spence, by the way, was the scientist. Back to you, Roy.
Very good, AC2GS. The linchpin in my mind is you have to come up with some reason, some profit-making reason why you would want people to go back and forth on the moon. That's where the airplane companies and space kind of diverge. People go back and forth to visit people. They go back and forth to visit factories, to set up business deals, to mine things, to buy and sell and make profits. The moon is an interesting scientific object and ripe for research. But other than research, as far as I'm aware, there is no rare material that you can mine. I think the helium-3 is kind of a screwy idea at this time. You know, maybe once we actually get fusion working. I'm not quite sure, other than scientific and bragging rights, what you would do with a ticket to the moon and back. You know, unless you're a trillionaire and you have nothing better to do and you just want to show off to your friends. And that doesn't really end up making a viable industry. So either the cost of getting back and forth to the moon has to collapse significantly, or someone has to come up with a couple of really good ideas of what you can do on the moon that you can't do here.
They
want to use it as a gas station.
That's the question. Why all of a sudden so valuable that the government is paying Elon Musk billions of dollars to get there? That's what I don't understand. Is it just that it's a launching pad to Mars? They didn't find anything on the moon worth anything in 1972. Why are they paying so much money to go back?
Good question, Rich. By the way, you, Wesley, and Paul Tripled, so congratulations on that. We really have to kind of learn to slow key again. That's one of the rationales, that it's part of a bigger plan as a way station and as a means of, you don't have to go down a big gravity well if you base your operations on the moon or Mars and maybe some other planet's moons. The big problem I have is it's kind of a regressive problem. What are you going to do on Mars that you can't do on Earth? Again, scientific exploration is great, but there's only so much money a taxpayer, an average taxpayer, will pay for it. And so you're left with the same exact question. Now, you've planted a flag on a moon base. Congratulations to us all. And now you're going to use it as a base of operations to get to Mars. What are you going to get on Mars that's going to be worth $1 trillion, other than research results? I keep on banging into the same problem. Unless getting from planet to planet somehow the technology makes it cheaper, by 1,000, I don't understand how it's a viable long-term situation. The cost of terraforming Mars would bankrupt the world, 1,000 times over. So you're not going to terraform Mars. You're going to put up little bases that if there's a crack in it, everyone dies almost instantly. I don't know. It seems to be a lose-lose situation. I think ultimately, in the same way that electronic vehicles are not going to take over the world, I think the future of exploration in the next 50 to 100 years is going to be through robotics, which is a heck of a lot cheaper, and if a robot dies, very few people will cry.
You want to be surprised? I can do that.
Do what? You can cut the cost of space exploration by 1,000?
By billions?
Pray tell.
Okay. Okay, Kimberlite pipes. On the Earth, Kimberlite pipes in geology, supported by geophysics, which I was doing for a number of years, also in gold mine, Burrard Gold Mine and Kennecott Corporation, that was copper industry. It was in Nebraska and Nevada. Legend job. So, when the lava was going out under very high pressure, we left the diamonds. We left the diamonds from the last last week. We didn't talk about, but shortly. So the kimberlite pipes are the places usually around 500 meters to 1 kilometer. Sometimes there are 3 miles across and very much circular, it looks like. So the lava was from the bottom up in the craters, and there was a high pressure and billions of years it took to create the diamonds. Now the kimberlite pipe are carrot-shaped pipes that are extended a couple of kilometers below the surface and are often located in the same stable regions where we found preserved impact craters, and that's soon. And by geologist approach, people start to be very much interested in tons of diamonds there, because those kimberlite pipes are very much visible and very much extended there. So, let me jump. Whoever is doing that, no way. 50 watts directly to the repeater with Yagi. Okay, no way. Anyhow, before we, because we cannot recycle the repeater. Okay, that's one thing. And the second thing is gold. It is estimated that the gold is everywhere there, but might be less than in the earth, the only thing that was never used. So it was never digged for. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Okay, this is AC2GS. Number one, diamonds aren't worth what they're really being asked. What you're asked to pay for it is a scam. They're quite abundant, but there's only there's a limited region where they're abundant. So if companies didn't hide them and bury them in safes and limit their release to the public, the price per carat for diamonds would plummet. And there are synthetic diamonds that are just as good. So you're not going to make buckets out of diamonds. It's going to cost you billions of dollars to get there. It's going to cost you billions of dollars to get back. And by the time you land, the Beers is going to probably put out a contract on killing you. Otherwise, you're going to screw up their entire industry, which is already screwed up. The price of diamonds is going to keep kind of diving down over time. So diamonds aren't it. Gold is fine. How are you going to mine gold? Do you have any proof that there's any gold there? I don't think so. It's all kind of theoretical. And how are you going to get all the mining equipment? Do you realize how heavy mining equipment is? Do you realize how much it costs to transport anything to the moon? The lunar lander was practically 5 ounces. So in order to get mining equipment, and you can't just kind of pick a hole, any hole, and kind of dig down and find a big ball of gold. So I doubt it. I do not think the economics of even gold, if you could do it, would pay back the severe cost transporting the most massive material practically that's available to be mined someplace. You know, because the heavier it is, the more fuel you need to get it off the moon. So I don't think so. Again, eventually, maybe if it only costs something like a couple of $100,000 to transport stuff back and forth, yeah, sure. But $1 billion? Not really. I don't think so.
Let me see if I have it. It's a little hard on Echo Link, but let me let it drop to see if I have it.
Okay, then me after that.
Okay, now I have it. If anybody's been to Los Angeles recently, I was there about 7 years ago. Downtown Los Angeles, you can walk for 10 blocks and still not pass all the tents for the homeless people. You know, I don't want to get into, you know, any kind of politics or whatever, but it just doesn't seem like the money is being well spent. And as you were saying, Roy, why can't they fly robots to Mars instead of trying to use the moon as a launching pad? It just doesn't make sense. Paul, does it make sense to you?
Do I have it, Roy?
Yes, you have it, Paul.
Okay, very good. Well, we already have robots, if you consider the rovers that are riding around on Mars right now, Curiosity and Perseverance. They're both nuclear-powered. They have radioisotope thermoelectric generators on board to power them. They don't need the sun. They've been up there, Perseverance, since 2021, February, and then Curiosity, 2012. So, you know, and they're both still operating. You had the two solar-powered rovers, which, in a sense, they are robots, Spirit and Opportunity. One drove around for 6 years. Opportunity drove around for 14 years. And they are doing the research. We could have more advanced ones going into the future. Last week on the net, I showed a picture that Roy put on his website about an airplane that NASA would like to develop, send to Mars, you know. So they all have, like, robot capabilities. So, you know, we've been doing that for years. Now, if you want to really send people to Mars, you're going to need fuel. They have that fuel from the moon. In those dark craters on the South Pole, there's ice. They can dig that ice out. They can melt it down. Now they have water. Water to the easy drink. You can separate the hydrogen and the oxygen. Now you have fuel, hydrogen, and oxygen as a propellant. And, of course, you have the oxygen to breathe. So that gives you your fuel to launch to Mars. That's one of the stories that NASA is telling people. We're a long way off from that. Roy?
Yeah, Paul, where do you get the energy to... Because water doesn't have energy. It has low energy bonds. You have to apply energy into it to break the low energy bonds to create high energy bonds so that you can burn it. So where do you get the energy from? I mean, you can get some from solar, but not a heck of a lot. You know, because then what are you going to do? Are you going to cover the entire moon with solar panels and then just spend your rest of your life maintaining the solar powers to suck up as much as you possibly can of the sunlight to break the water bonds, to turn it into fuel? I don't know. I think something's missing in that equation.
Yeah, you're missing the fission units that they are working on now. They even have one that's operating for the last couple of years. They want to see how long it's going to work. The 10-kilowatt fission units, they plan on putting a series of them. You know, naturally, they'll start off with one, and that will power the base. You know, this way you could be sure to make it through the 14-day night, and eventually you'll have two and three and maybe a dozen of these 10,000-kilowatt power plants. And I'm trying to think what they call it. They call it the 10K. I forget the name. The units that they're building. And they're essentially little fission plants. And, you know, they're going to use that fission capability. I think there's a magnetic system where it's going to drive this thing up and down, and that's going to create electricity. I forget, this is some bizarre system that they have. Anyway, they're going to create 10 kilowatts each out of these things. So you'd be able to use that for electrolysis, I would think. Back to you, Ron.
Well, I mean, maybe for life, you know, to kind of recycle the water into oxygen, breathing it, and then you're back into the water thing again. But how much energy does the average rocket leaving, say, the moon for Mars, how much energy does it have? I think those 10 kilowatt generators would pale to kind of soak up enough energy to create the chemical fuel for one single one of those rocket ships.
Yeah, I know. I know. They have millions of pounds of fuel on board. Elon Musk has a million pounds of, what is it, methane and oxygen. So you don't have to get the hydrogen. He's going to get the methane from the some chemical process on the moon. I started reading that about a month ago. I forget what they're going to do with that. They have a way to get methane out of the moon, and then you take the oxygen that's going to be also produced. They'll use that as well. The other moon lander will be Blue Origin's, they call it the Blue Moon. That will be landing on the moon and returning to the Gateway space station as well. Just like what SpaceX is going to do with their Starship. But that will definitely have liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. You're really going to have both for the Jeff Bezos version of the moon lander. Back to your work. Comment.
Wesley recognized. I just want to say my two cents. Well, I mean, you get the hydrogen as long as well with the hydrolysis. If you find enough water, which is also problematic, there's water, but is there enough water easy enough to mine? And then if you have some kind of an energy source, yeah, you know, I've been told that fusion is only 20 years away. That would be great. Then you can break it into oxygen and hydrogen. You're going to have a little problem using methane because you're going to need a source of carbon. I don't know how much free carbon is available in the moon ground. There's, I think, a Brichard reaction. We talked about it on the our circling little lab up there, where carbon dioxide and water can be turned into methane. You can pull out the carbon from the carbon dioxide and such. So, a lot of trouble. I think it's a heck of a lot of trouble. I think that, unfortunately, technology, the problem is that no one actually asks an accountant about any of this. They ask scientists, and scientists kind of have a built-in tendency to be optimistic that if you throw enough brains at a problem, you can solve it. But ultimately, a lot of science is determined by cash. If you don't have the cash, you don't have the science. So I'm thinking, although it's theoretical, I think a lot of it at this point, as far as I understand the technology, tends to be impractical. But, you know, we can discuss it. Wesley, what did you want to say?
What is the response to your comment about the billions of dollars of cost and how you're going to carry out that load? Well, an article, the person on the moon would weigh 16.5% its weight on the Earth. So the person would be much lighter on the moon. Conversely, a person, a rocket, or everything that is there is 83.5% heavier on Earth than the moon. So we have no problem with that. The second thing is that the cost of the flight is billions of dollars. Well, I have a problem with that. Because in 2012, Russian rocket flight was $29 million. And in 2016, Charles Bolin sent a letter to Congress saying that the agency would need to pay $490 million to Russia for 6 feet seats on Soyuz rocket for U.S. astronauts. So it comes to 82 million per seat or 71 million per seat, and at the same time, Elon Musk was coming with approximately $63 million per flight to the ASA, International Space Station, ISS. So, where you took those billions out from? I just don't understand. NTHCS.
ACTTS. Leslie, approximately how much would it cost for you to be transported to, say, the middle of Manhattan tonight? How much would you say it would cost?
Assuming that I have a car, it's going to cost me about $7.
Okay. How much would it cost to end up in the middle of Shenzhen, China tonight?
I have no idea.
Would you consider that it's significantly more than $7?
That is correct.
Okay, I submit the same thing. It's a lot easier to get into the orbit where that lovely little ISS is than to get to the moon. Do you believe that?
That is correct.
Well, that's where the billion comes in. And even though the gold weighs less, it's still the same mass, it weighs less on the moon, it still weighs a significant amount, and lifting it from the small gravity well of the moon to the Earth, and more important, lifting all of the mining gear from the Earth to the moon, unless you plan to smelt all the industrial equipment somehow in the moon as well. So it's a really expensive maneuver. Even the optimists gave up on mining gold. That's why they turned to helium-3, because if helium-3 would go for the same price as it goes for right now, you could make an accounting case for moon landings to get vast quantities of helium-3. But I assure you, if you factor in the cost of gold, and also the cost of gold is a function of scarcity. As the Spanish Empire figured out, after they looted the Americas for gold, the price of gold plummeted, their currency, which was backed, collapsed, and they almost ceased to exist. So gold is not an endless abundance. If you double the amount of gold in the world, you end up lowering the price of gold per ounce. It's a complicated thing, but that's economics there.
Okay, I'm going to respond to that. Okay.
WTBZ. Diamonds. I know you know you're a resident expert.
Doesn't have to be deep.
And you know a thousand times
you have a
more,
like five,
100,000 times
five,
more
five,
than I do about space exploration.
But due to erosion,
with the United States now putting all of
that
effort
about the area
Elon Musk to go to the moon, do you agree with that?
And the heavy volcanic, it was heavily volcanically active and was bombarded by meteors, or any solar bodies, celestial bodies, then we're talking about estimated diamonds on the moon buried within service. So from one hand, it looks for some people that would be very difficult to calculate exactly how many diamonds are on the moon, but they are there. You don't have to have any diamond mining equipment just to take them and pick them up. Thank you, Adrian. I'm sorry. One more. Okay, so gold. Gold is nuggets. Also, in nuggets also. And I cannot say that moon service is not eroded. And never eroded, never changed. So we are assuming that there was no water that would contribute to the process on the moon. We could say something else, quite different thing about Mars, but we're not talking about Mars right now. So we say that there is a possibility that first travels, full return of the cost of the money would be actually concentrated on something like that. Let me drop.
Wesley.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, Wesley, you know you were doubling with Rich. Again, You guys got to listen to each other. I understand it's a little easier for me to listen to all of you, but you got to kind of slow up on the quick keying. Rich asked Paul a question. Let's see if Paul heard Rich's question. Let's have Paul answer the question. We could always go back to things like gold and diamonds. The bottom line for me about gold and diamonds is if it was truly viable, and I don't think you can just reach down and grab a diamond on the surface of the moon personally, but if this was viable, we would have heard it to the point of annoying me. Again, people have kind of tried all kinds of excuses, the numbers don't add up, and all we're left with this week is helium-3. But we'll get back to it. Paul, did you hear Rich's question?
Yes, I did. I know they were doubling, but I did hear Rich. And he was asking if I agreed with all this money that's being thrown to Elon Musk for his moon adventure. And, that contract was initially given out, a few years ago. And I disagreed with NASA when they did that because NASA believes in redundancy. They believe in having at least two, sometimes three companies or three projects at the same time. In case one thing fails, they always have another one that might have worked. And they failed to do that with the contract for the human landing system, HLS, they call it. NASA's only paying them for that part of it, for having a Starship go from lunar orbit down to the surface and back up again. Paying for all these launches that he's doing on Earth, this is on his own. The ones that he keeps blowing up, that's all on his own. NASA is not paying for that. Now, they finally saw it my way. Maybe they listened to the net. And they gave another contract out, and the climate went to Blue Origin and now there's an equal contract to have the same system bringing ash to and from the moon with Blue Origin. And so, yeah, I agree. You have to have that. Which one is going to do it first? Right now they say SpaceX. But with all his problems that he's having, maybe not. But at least you have that, plan B. But, yeah, you have to have that money there, and it's not the tens of billions of dollars that he's spending on all his rockets that he keeps blowing up. They call it RUD, R-U-D, Rapid Unscheduled Disassembly. He does that one after the other. Roy, over to you.
KC2GS, thank you, Paul. My understanding is that he's pretty much gone through NASA's budget of. He should at this point be able to land something on the moon. Uh-huh. Also, the person who approved that, this story, I don't remember her name. She was a bureaucrat in NASA that temporarily became the lead because the leadership was going through some transference, and so she was the determining factor. She signed off on that $2+ billion check Elon and then retired from government and took a job at SpaceX. So that's real kosher.
That's Leader. The last name is Leader.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people who probably should be in jail at this point rather than on the moon.
I concur. What are you going to do? I was never crazy about her anyway. She never seemed like she was right with the, they always had her on with these news conferences. She just, there was something wrong, and sure enough, I was shocked when I found out I shouldn't have been, that she now works for SpaceX.
Yeah, there's a lot of shocking things. I don't even understand, maybe you have a better reason than I can perceive. Why would you design a rocket that required as much as 10 different refuelings to get to the moon? I mean, we haven't been able to do it once yet. So, wouldn't it make sense to build a big rocket that maybe just needs one refueling instead of a medium-sized rocket that needs 10 refuelings?
I concur. I think we've talked about this before on the Space Net report. You know, in the early days with Von Braun, you know, there were some scientists back then, engineers, I guess, rocket engineers, that had that thought. Maybe we should put a rocket in orbit and then refuel it and then send it to the moon. You know, and that was quickly knocked down because of the physics behind it, you know, and then of course, the money. And these people were dealing with slide rules. Back then, they said, no way. And then eventually they came out with, you know, the system that they have, you know, with the Apollo and, you know, having one vehicle separate from the other, you know, just one vehicle go to the moon, and then you could have, you know, bring with it the lander, the LEM. By the way, you were talking about the powerful rockets. We do have a more powerful rocket than the Saturn V now. That's the Space Launch System. Give you an idea, the Saturn V, 5.6 million pounds of thrust, where the SLS now, Space Launch System, that will send the people to the moon on the next trip, is 8.5 million pounds of thrust. So it is more powerful. But, you know, and of course, the Starship that Elon Musk is building, that's going to be like 15 million pounds, twice the power of the Saturn V rocket. The ones he keeps blowing up back to your room.
So why does he need to refuel it? I thought one of the primary things, and they really screwed around with that during the last demo. They demoed a lot of nonsensical things. There was something that looked like a Pez dispenser that was designed for him to launch 10, 20 of his Starlink satellites out. The door got jammed, and they couldn't close it, and they couldn't fully open it. Also, they were testing the in-space refueling, but instead of two rockets, one fueling the other, all they basically did was push some rocket fuel from a small full tank to an empty tank, which I don't understand why that was a demo for anything. But aren't they designing that specifically to be refuelable, and won't it require more than a few refuels for each trip? So I don't understand, unless they're planning to put multiple ton supplies at the head of it, I don't understand why they need 10 refueling attempts to properly refuel it for the whole trip.
Yeah, a couple of things are going on. There's a lot of venting that goes on. So you refuel it, fill it up the best you can, and say you get it halfway full. You know, to keep this pressure down, you know, liquid oxygen, you know, if you close off the valve, that pressure is going to start climbing. You would need a tank, you know, with 2-inch thick walls, steel walls to hold the pressure back. So it'll, you know, you get up to, let's say, $500, what is it, 250 degrees in orbit around the Earth, you know, at a, you're going to heat this up. The pressure is going to go up to 3,000 psi. You can't allow that. So you need constant venting. And I eventually have another flight go up, and you fill it up, and you fill it up. But each time that you go up, it's venting more and more. The fuel, it's bizarre. I mean, you know, you'd like to do as many flights as you can, as quick as you can, so you can fill the thing up and blast it off to the moon. It's a long way, in my opinion, a long way from perfecting this. You got to do something else. This is what they plan on doing, Roy. It's crazy.
Yeah, we agree. I think the brilliance of Apollo was there were very smart engineers who were capable of all kinds of clever tricks, but they understood that clever tricks slow you down. And I think they kept it as simple as humanly possible. If anyone looked at the lunar modules, they would be slightly embarrassed. And some flat earthers kind of use that as a ploy. They say that the thing was barely tinfoil covered. It was lightweight. It was disposable. You would throw it in the garbage and no one would notice. You know, they're expecting something from a 1950 sci-fi movie or something. I think that was the beauty of Apollo. You know, I mean, in some cases they couldn't keep it simple because, you know, they were kind of stretching the envelope. But in many ways they kept it simple. They kept down the flourishes.